Our next speaker is Dr. William Breitbart. Dr. Breitbart is from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and Cornell University, and he will be speaking on existential issues in end-of-life care. Welcome, Dr. Breitbart.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. It's a great privilege also for me to be here today, and I want to thank all of my good friends at the NINR for their friendship and their continued support and encouragement. And thank you for inviting me here today. I'd also just want to specifically mention and thank Dr. June Lunny, who about 10 years ago in the lobby behind this auditorium encouraged me to pursue some of my interests in palliative care research and assured me that the NINR would consider funding someone who wasn't a nurse yet. So, thanks. I was just in Brazil this past weekend. I don't expect you to feel sorry for me about that. I was in Rio de Janeiro. October the 8th was the World Hospice Day, and I had the good fortune of being invited to be a plenary speaker at a large South American palliative care event held in honor of World Hospice Day. And when I spoke, there was a simultaneous translation from my English into Portuguese. The only strange thing about that particular experience was after I would make a joke, there'd be about a minute, and then people would laugh. So I'm going to have to get used to an immediate response to I'm going to try not to be too funny. It's end of life care, actually. So, what I've been doing over the last, I'm going to say only 10 years, even though it's been more like 20. What I've been doing over the last 10 years in my work, and most of this work supported by NINR, I've been on a mission trying to expand what our concepts of adequate palliative care really mean. I think in 2005, it's still true that when we're talking about adequate palliative care in most settings, the focus is on the assessment and management of pain and other physical symptoms. And what I've been trying to do through my research and teaching and writing and publishing and lecturing is to expand this focus beyond pain and physical symptom control to include psychiatric, psychosocial, existential, and spiritual domains of care. And the NINR has been very instrumental in helping play a critical role in expanding this aspect of research in palliative care. There are a variety of issues that fall under the sort of heading of existential or spiritual concerns or issues at the frontier of palliative medicine and end-of-life care. Several of these topics or constructs or issues are issues that we in our group at Sloan Kettering and psychiatry have been tackling directly. Others are issues that we've had some interaction with other collaborators internationally. Some of the issues that have been at the forefront of research and existential issues at the end of life have been issues such as interest in assisted suicide, desire for hastened death, demoralization syndrome, which was described by Philip Slavny about 30 years ago and now made more relevant in the palliative care setting by David Kassane, which is a syndrome he characterizes as a syndrome separate from depression, but characterized by loss of meaning and a desire for hastened death in terminally ill populations. We're trying harder to understand and measure hopelessness as it applies to the terminally ill population. We're trying to understand concepts of spirituality through our efforts to understand the importance of meaning as a component of spirituality, to understand suffering and what patients and clinicians mean by suffering, to understand the construct of dignity and through understanding these various constructs, help develop interventions. And you'll hear a little bit about an intervention we've been developing that focuses on meaning, hope, and dignity as well. We've been looking at issues of the relationship between the will to live, acceptance of death, insight into prognosis, and the relationship between those constructs and depression. And we've also, more recently, been trying to develop measures that are useful and valid in the terminal population to help research some of these constructs. Up to this point, many of us who have been trying to answer some of these questions have been hampered by the fact that the measures that come closest to examining these constructs are measures that are inadequate, developed in non-terminally ill populations, often non-medically ill populations. And finally, I'll touch briefly on some novel intervention work that we've been doing. This slide kind of summarizes the research agenda in our shop as to psychosocial issues and palliative care, particularly with a focus on these spiritual and existential issues. With NINR's help, we've done some epidemiologic work looking at the prevalence, correlates, and impact of on quality of life of depression, hopelessness, and desire for hastened death. And we've done two large R01-funded studies, one in terminally ill AIDS patients and one in terminally ill cancer patients funded by the NINR. We've also been looking at the concept of spiritual well-being with a focus on meaning as a component of spiritual well-being. Our construct of spiritual well-being, our concept of it, is that spiritual well-being is a construct that involves two components, a component of faith and a component of meaning. And we've been utilizing the component of the meaning component of spiritual well-being as a non-religious, non-denominational, medically acceptable means of communicating with patients around issues of spirituality. And we've been looking at spiritual well-being in terms of its relationship with depression, hopelessness, suicidal ideation, desire for death, despair at the end of life, and even in its impact on patients' tolerance of physical symptoms. As I mentioned earlier, part of our endeavor is meant to develop better tools and measures to do some of the research to look at how these constructs affect end-of-life care. And so over the last few years, we've been developing and validating measures in this area. We developed a measure of desire for hastened death we call the Scheduled Attitudes Towards Hastened Death. And right now we're in the middle of an R01 grant developing and validating a measure of hopelessness in the terminally ill. We've also been conducting a number of intervention trials. One of our trials focuses in both the terminally ill AIDS population and terminally ill cancer population, focuses on the role of depression in determining or influencing desire for hastened death, and then asks the question, what happens to desire for death when you treat depression in a population of depressed terminally ill cancer patients or terminally ill AIDS patients? In cancer patients, we've been treating patients with psychostimulant drugs for depression because of the rapid onset and the short duration of treatment opportunity. And in AIDS patients, we've been using traditional SSRI antidepressant drugs. And the data is quite complex, and we're in the midst of analyzing it, but the short answer is that if you treat depression in patients with terminally ill cancer or terminally ill AIDS, when you treat depression successfully, the desire for hastened death remits in about 85% of patients. We've also been very hard at work at developing a set of novel psychotherapy interventions for patients at the end of life, and we're in the midst of conducting several randomized controlled trials, some funded by the NINR through R21s and R01 mechanisms. We have a meaning-centered group psychotherapy intervention, which I'll tell you a little bit about in a moment, and an individual form of meaning-centered psychotherapy that we're studying in controlled trials. And I am part of a international multi-site randomized clinical trial of dignity intervention therapy being conducted in Canada, New York, and Perth, Australia. The measure of desire for hastened death, the schedule of attitudes towards hastened death allowed us to do a number of studies looking at the relationship between desire for hastened death and a variety of psychosocial, psychiatric, and existential variables. It's a 20-item self-report scale validated in terminal ill AIDS patients and terminal ill cancer patients. One study that we conducted that appeared in JAMA used this tool and examined the relationship between desire for death and depression in a population of terminal ill cancer patients. This particular slide comes from a first cut of data on about 400 patients. What we found was that 17% of this terminally ill population, these were all patients who were being treated at a palliative care hospital and had an average life expectancy of 28 days after admission to this palliative care hospital. So these were all patients who were within about a month of death. 17% had a high desire for death, and 17% met structural clinical SCID diagnostic criteria for major depression. Those with depression had higher SAD scores than the non-depressed. And those patients who had a clinical depression were 4 times more likely to have desire for death than patients without a clinical depression. When we looked at the predictors of desire for hastened death, we were able to confirm what we had found in earlier studies and what others had found in studies as well, was that depression played an enormously important role in predicting desire for hastened death. And in fact, we found that the level of depression, in fact, was one of the important factors in predicting desire for hastened death. But in addition to depression, what we found was that social support and physical debilitation were important, but surprisingly, hopelessness, independent of depression, was an additional, very powerful predictor of desire for hastened death. If you look at this slide, what you can see here is if you did not have any, if you didn't score high on a hopelessness scale, if you didn't score high on the depression scale, you had no desire for hastened death. If you were depressed, you score high, but not hopeless. If you were hopeless but not depressed, you scored high. But if you were both hopeless and depressed, you scored quite high. About 65% of folks had a high desire for death. This allowed us to develop a model for understanding the correlates of desire for death, which allowed us to focus on the importance of depression and hopelessness both synergistically and independently as main influences on desire for death, with some other important contributors, functional limitations, social support, pain and other symptoms, and importantly, spiritual well-being. We conducted a series of studies looking at the effects of spiritual well-being on a variety of end-of-life measures of distress. You can see here, using this FACET spiritual well-being scale, which has 2 subscales, one for meaning, one for faith. If you scored high on the FACET spiritual well-being scale, you had much less depression. And it was the meaning subscale, the meaning component of spiritual well-being that buffered against depression, not necessarily faith or how religious you considered yourself. In addition, spiritual well-being protected against desire for hastened death. The higher you scored on spiritual well-being, the less likely you were to have desire for hastened death. The less hopeless you were likely to be if you were scored high on spiritual well-being, particularly the meaning component. If you scored high on the meaning component of spiritual well-being, you had less suicidal ideation. And if you look at the three components of end-of-life despair, hopelessness, desire for hastened death, and suicidal ideation. While depression plays an important role in predicting those three aspects of despair at end of life, it's the meaning component of spirituality that has the most powerful effect on end of life's despair. This brought us to developing an intervention which we call meaning-centered psychotherapy, which focuses on the meaning component of spiritual well-being. This psychotherapy is based on the work of Viktor Frankl. Some of you know who Viktor Frankl was, a Viennese psychiatrist who developed what he called logotherapy, which focused on several components of the importance of meaning as the third basic drive of human behavior and instinct. There are several basic concepts of meaning-centered psychotherapy based on Frankl's work. One is that life has meaning and never ceases to have meaning. The second is that the need to find meaning in human existence is a third primary and basic motivation. And that we have the freedom to find meaning in existence and to choose our attitudes towards suffering. There are some predictable sources of meaning, and our intervention focuses on teaching patients in group intervention and individual format these various sources of meaning through creativity, through experience, primarily relationships and love, through attitude towards suffering, and through legacy in the historical context. And it's through those sources of meaning that patients are able to achieve a sense of transcendence. Cancer and the finiteness of confronting the finiteness of life and the existential facts of life, suffering, death, and guilt, has an impact on meaning. And it's our intent with this intervention to enhance, sustain a patient's sense of meaning. We studied a large group of patients with advanced stage 3 and 4 cancers. 75% had stage 4 cancers. We used a variety of measures of spiritual well-being, religious experience, desire for death, hopelessness, depression, anxiety, optimism, quality of life, social support, and symptom burden. We assessed folks prior to the group intervention, at the time of accrual, prior to the group intervention, after the 8-week intervention, and then the 2-month follow-up. There are 8 sessions to the meaning-centered group intervention. The first session involves an introduction to the concepts and sources of meaning. The second session focuses on the impact of cancer on meaning. The third and fourth sessions focus on legacy and the historical context of meaning. The fifth, sixth, and seventh sessions focus on meaning through attitudinal values, creativity, and experience. And the eighth session is a final session that summarizes the entire therapy. This was some preliminary data from our group intervention with 100 patients, about half in arm A, the meaning-centered, and half in arm B, the supportive psychotherapy. It's a randomized trial comparing meaning-centered psychotherapy group with a standard supportive group. Both interventions are manualized. What you can see here in the meaning-centered group, patients have quite a powerful effect size on spiritual well-being in general, but in particular meaning, with significant effects on desire for death, hopelessness, and very little of such effects on the in the supportive group intervention. So what we've developed in this in R21 is a model for a group psychotherapy that has powerful effects on sustaining and enhancing a sense of meaning, hope, and reducing desire for hastened death. One item from the desire for hastened death scale: despite my illness, my life still has meaning and purpose. Before the intervention, about 40% of patients said no. After the intervention, no patients said no. We've adapted this group intervention into an individual format intervention to allow for more flexibility and to do the intervention at bedside. And this is just from our first 70 patients or so. Again, we have a very powerful intervention that enhances meaning, hopelessness, reduces depression, and improves quality of life. This is a picture of my grandfather on my mother's side, Rabbi Ephraim Ashri. He was the head of a yeshiva, a religious school in Warsaw before the war. He was a Talmudic scholar and a researcher, and he was considered a doctor of the soul in his community. He did research on Jewish law, Mishnah, and his work continues to influence the evolution of Orthodox Jewish practice today. It's my hope that I might be walking in his footsteps and also be considered a doctor of the soul, and hopefully my research and this research and the research of those other colleagues of mine on this panel will influence end-of-life care. Thank you very much.